You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Welcome back to another episode of The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker, sports, and entertainment industries. I'm Mohammeda El-Muhajir, along with my co-host.
Hey guys, it's Nikita Newell Hall.
Yes, and we're back with, you know, we say every episode is an exciting episode, but for us, it is an exciting episode, and we hope that you guys will feel that today's guest is just as exciting as we do. Nikita, you're gonna introduce our guest, or a legend, an icon.
First of all, I have to introduce our audience to my sister, my dear friend, who I was blessed to meet so many years ago in New York, doing our thing. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please bow down for the one and only Big Les? So Les, look, I gotta talk to you about so many things, so I'm just gonna hop right in. But first of all, just talking about dance, right? That's how I have known you to get your start. I heard that you were coined the legs of urban America, and I have seen these legs, so I might agree with that. Choreographing or starring in videos for Whitney Houston and one of my favorites, Michael Jackson's Remember the Time. First of all, it's one of my favorite songs, but then the choreography, and every time the camera came to you, I was like, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I mean, that's one of the greatest videos that have been made ever.
Listen, when I tell you the things that little girls dream about come true, this is what happened. We're in New York, phone rings, word on the street is there's audition Saturday for Michael Jackson video, right? It's like Wednesday night in New York City. I'm begging my mother, please, 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 I have no money. I'm a broke dancer. Can you get me a flight? Fatima and I were friends. I knew she was choreographing, but she made it clear to all of us, John Singleton's going to have the last word. So literally about 12 of us flew out to LA to make the auditions on Saturday. We get there, and it's crazy how you just don't know that people have been watching you. So John Singleton knew who all of us were because he watches music videos. Later on down the line, Michael knew who we were. Prince knew who we were. Like, all of these people knew who we were by name. Hammer knew who we were. You know what I'm saying? You just didn't know. So we get there, we audition. And because he picked so many of us New York dancers, they created a budget for us. They got some of us housing. They gave us per diem. Like, he was so happy to have us there. And I was just like, Mom, I made it. She was like, okay, great. All right, you still got to come back home. You got to pay that car note. You know, they're not trying to hear it. So we get into rehearsals. We're in rehearsals for almost 2 weeks without Michael. Michael's having his own private rehearsals. We see Michael maybe 2 days before we go to shooting just to do some blocking. And when Michael comes in, his routine doesn't look like ours because Michael has all kinds of stank, flavor, whatever on it. And it just was so extra funky that I was like, oh, shoot, we got work to do, because his was just his rhythm and his syncopation and his in the pocket of it all was just so dope to witness. They made us obviously sign contracts the size of a phone book and like, don't talk to him, don't look at him. But all artists love hanging out with the dancers. We're usually in our corner working on moves, battling, snapping mama jokes, whatever. Whereas their life is stressed. The publicity person is pulling at them. Their family's calling them because they want money. Na, 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 na. So all the artists tend to hang out with us. So Michael was really on set hanging out with us, working on new moves or whatever. And he'd be cursing and you'd be like, huh, did Michael just curse? Because you forget he's still a, you know what I'm saying? Right. The same way that nobody knew how Whitney Houston isn't around a way girl. Y'all didn't know that, but she'd be popping gum and jumping double dutch and all that other stuff with us because we knew, you know? And so being on that set was magic. Like having my name on the door and on the clothing rack and not being there for like, I'm here for the Universal Tour. Like, no, I'm actually working and pulling up to set. Like, this is my job for the whole month. So we shot for 2 extra weeks after 2 weeks of rehearsal and everybody was there. If you remember Magic Johnson, so half the NBA came to visit. Iman. So half of the supermodels were there. He had just done Boys in the Hood. So all the actors were there. Like, it was a who's who of who, what, where, when. Everybody was on set every day, but we just didn't have cameras and really weren't allowed to take pictures. So it was just magic. And the energy was insane. And literally right after that, John had myself, Josie and Tish, and Fatima move in with Janet because he was getting ready to do Poetic Justice. And Janet hadn't really been around any homegirls, right? And that's why you see when her hair was like Josie's with the braids in Poetic Justice. We lived with her for like, I probably left after 6 months because I was like, we were there for free. They were, even though we were staying at the house and they got like Nike to send us clothes and we'd be in rehearsals, just dancing. We weren't really making any money. And so Bobby Brown came a knocking and me and Fatima bounced. And that's why when you see Tish and Josie in the next That's the Way Love Goes and all that other stuff, it's because we left. We had to go. And I still haven't really danced for Janet, but I would love to. Her and Misty, Usher and Justin Timberlake are on my wish list.
How did you get your start in dance and in choreography?
Well, my foundation is gymnastics first. I'm not a professionally trained dancer, but I am a professionally trained gymnast. I started gymnastics late when I was 10, because most gymnasts start when they're 2, but I was such a tomboy and my mom had put me in this trampoline class and the guy was like, oh my gosh, she's really good. And literally within a year, I was competing in national competition when I switched over to gymnastics. And I got a full gymnastics scholarship to Springfield College. So everything about me is gymnastic first. The only bit of dance from that training was obviously from the floor routine and doing some jazz classes and stuff. But I'm a New York City club kid. So all of my dance training is really street, house music, hip hop, battling the circle training. And the fact that I know how to point my toes because of gymnastics. So I was able to like combine the two, battle against the guys. Most of them aren't doing the gymnastics, so I could backflip on their asses, you know, while I'm like in the circle. And that was, of course, during a time in the 90s where everybody was hanging out in the clubs. All the music executives, all of the artists, everybody was attainable. There wasn't like a VIP section you couldn't get to. Everybody was in the mix. They had business cards. They were passing out cards. They'd see me battling like, oh my God, I need you in my video. Oh my God, I need you in my video. And so that's really, you know, when I got out of college, I got into a 5-year master's program on scholarship and you can only compete for 4 years. So I was like, I'm out of here after 4th year. I'm going to Broadway. I got to dance. I was watching music videos like Paula Abdul back then and Jody Watley and Janet and all that stuff. And I just would be sitting in my dorm room like, oh my God, I could do this. And I didn't see any girls who, even though they were Black women dancing, they weren't backflipping and they were just very jazz. I was like, no, this is for me. And so I opted out of my 5th year of sports medicine, got to New York. Literally the first couple of auditions I got, one was an off-Broadway play. One was dancing for Full Force at a celebrity radio basketball game. And I did backflips across the gym. The way you talked about girls doing backflips across the field, that was me at the gym. And by the time I got to the locker room, all of the music execs were like, I need you. I have an artist. Come dance for us, blah, blah, blah. And then the transition from dance to choreography was, because I was a featured dancer, the choreographers who were hired to do the work would show up to rehearsals like, okay, everybody, I need an 8 count. I'm like, wait, you're the one. Where's your 8 count? And so they would ask me like, do you choreograph? And because I choreographed floor routines from gymnastics, I was like, yes, let me just say yes. And I didn't realize that there was a pay difference. There's a respect difference. There's a control difference. So I just started choreographing. And like Real Love, Mary J. Blige was like my first real big project. Puffy came to me like, yo, Les, you know how Puff talks. I need this hip hop gritty. You know how y'all lost Tom Girl, sexy, Doc Martens. Like, but you know, and he used to be in a club battling and stuff with us. So he put me and Mary together and then that was it.
Thank you for that. Like this whole, I feel like this whole episode should be titled Remember the Time, because we just going back, you was bringing back the memories, the club, the circle.
How do you go from dance to hosting? Was Rap City the first thing?
Yeah, I had done probably, because I had done some acting work. And of course, I had done theater and stage. So me being in front of the camera was comfortable as an actor, but interviewing was a whole different thing. I actually was brought on BET to be a guest on Madeline Wood's show. She had a show called Video LP. So they had me dance and perform on the show like they would do any late night show, and then would sit on the couch and talk to her. And so as we're having a conversation, I can see the producer from Rap City come downstairs going like signaling me to make sure I talk to him before I leave. And he's like, oh my God, we're just listening to you talk. Would you ever consider hosting Rap City? And I'm like, sure. Like, because who turns down, when you're a dancer, you don't turn down anything, right? You work for yourself. We didn't have agents then. You're fending for yourself. So you say yes to pretty much everything. So I had to audition like two or three times. And then they took the stuff upstairs. And then of course the powers that be weren't feeling me. One, I didn't look the part, right? Two, a female voice in the hip hop is something you rarely ever heard or saw. But because I knew and spent so much time with all of these artists on the tour buses with their family behind the curtain, that I had more information about them and their story. And because we all grew up in the clubs together, I knew most of them before they had their deals when I was a starving dancer. So I have relationships that you just can't fake and information that you can't put on a teleprompter or a script. So Keith Paschal and Sunita Brooks really went to bat for me. And next thing you know, the labels and the artists were requesting me directly. And that's kind of how I got the show. Prince DeJure was the one to usher me in. We had done, I think, Spring Bling or something in Jacksonville, Florida, which was a wild weekend, but I got to interview Outkast first. And I started to grow. I had really, really good producers, right? Because you start to see the things that are like clutch words or, you know, habits and stuff like that, that they were able to like pick me apart and show me what to do and not to do. And then I learned about producing the show and stuff. So I got to produce later on in the career, but it was a blessing. You know, hip hop was my wheelhouse and I ended up being the one sometimes to feed them more information than they could give to me. But working at BET was tough. You know, when the powers that be are upstairs are men and you don't physically or sexually excite them because you're not their type, they're like, yeah, no. So there were other people on the network who probably got more love than me if it wasn't for the artists or the fact that I had to work 10 times harder with the knowledge and the experience and the labels calling. If my career there would have been probably shorter than 7 years, but it was a fight every year still. I was making more as a dancer and a choreographer than I was in my 7 years of doing Rap City. And radio happened while I was there. Wendy Williams had gone on vacation. No, she got put on probation at Hot 97 in New York. So they had me come in and fill in for her for a week. Then they offered me weekends. And then literally in 2 weeks, they offered me the morning show with Dr. Dre and Ed Lover. And then literally like in 6 months, they had me audition with Big Boy in Los Angeles. They loved me. So I moved out to LA. And then that's when I started producing Rap City. Live in the studio and on location in LA. So things just kind of happened one right after the other.
Wow, I love this story. I mean, mainly because you're talking about something that is still so relevant today. And I want to know how you stayed motivated when you've acknowledged several times, even during our short conversation here, like, you know, maybe my body type wasn't the most accepted. Maybe my skin color wasn't the most accepted. Maybe just my look, my style, the way I was, wasn't what was considered, you know, acceptable from a media standpoint. You know, today, Les and Mohammeda, when you look at social media, there are so many images still that exclude the majority of what women look like. I mean, the pictures that we see, the people who elevate to become the influencers, and, you know, it's becoming a bit more inclusive now, but I'm saying even people who fall outside of what the skin tones are, what the body types are, and they still manage to be famous, still for 90% of the people, they still don't look like that even. So how do you stay motivated in a culture and in a world that has decided that what you look like might not be the standard, but yet you have so much beauty and so much grace and you own the spaces that you walk in. How do you do that? And what is your advice for women today who are still feeling what you're saying that you've experienced?
And so honestly, when you have a passion for something and a dream for something, like that's all I ever dreamed about is gymnastics and then dance as a little kid, that there's, you could tell me no, but I'm about to show you. So I've spent my whole life proving people wrong, right? One, I'm too black. No, black, there are no gymnasts who are black. No, you can't be. No, you're too tall. I'm like, but I can. And so when God gives you gifts and you recognize the ability to how to use them, then you just have to throw it in everybody's face, especially when you're in a room of people who you know you are better than. So now you have to force them to accept you. And it's crazy that until you hear somebody who's A-list like Viola Davis talk about all the hardships she's been through and all the names and there, and people are so easy to dismiss it. Well, at least you made it. Yeah, but that should leave scars, man. And we got to work 20 times harder to prove to you that we are overqualified for what we do because of the way we look, to the point where you can't deny us. And so me knowing what hard work looks like, I'm used to it at this point. I know, especially now being at this age and this stage, right? Ageism is creeping into it. The resume is long and strong, but you know, I'm not 19 or 22 anymore. And they want something that's young, hot and fresh, who still is underqualified for me. So I still have to continue to prove that I'm viable, that I'm knowledgeable, that I can still backflip and all these other things. So the hustle and the fight just never stops. And I don't see myself being or doing anything other than what God has given me. Having Debbie Allen as somebody to look at, you know, to transition from dance. Sure, I'm moving into the director space because the body can only do what the body can do for so long, right? I have to be realistic about that. As much as I want to cartwheel until I'm 111, I can. I'm still backflipping and trampolining and trapezing, as you see on my social media. But at some point, the brakes are going
to
stop.
To me, one of your most iconic dance moments, I mean, they all iconic, but this one sits at the top of my list because I just love Living Single. There is nothing like that opening scene. There's nothing like those opening credits. I have never seen anything like it before, and I have not seen anything since you on that roof dancing behind that sheet.
That's the craziest thing, because you couldn't have told me that 30 years later that this thing would still be like the biggest thing of my career with all the work that I have done, right? Which is crazy. I remember I was on tour, I think, with either Bobby Brown or Heavy D, and Spike Lee was filming Malcolm X. And there was a director choreographer, Otis Salid, who you guys know from School Days. He did Good in Black Hair. He did I Don't Want to Be Alone Tonight. So he choreographed it, shot it, and everything. So I knew of his work, and he was choreographing a Lindy Hop scene in Malcolm X. And I love Lindy Hop. But they had started rehearsals while I was on tour. I think I got back maybe second or third week in. I think Laurie Ann was one of the people who was in rehearsals for that. So she came, let me come in and introduce me to Otis. And he was busy. He's like, but I can't let you in. We're too far along, blah, blah, blah. I ended up doing some extra work on the film, but I just was so happy to meet him and just so upset that I couldn't be in the scene. Well, my phone rings weeks later and Otis is on the line. And I was just like, first of all, I don't remember giving him my number, but I was just like, you playing, this ain't, come on, stop. And he's like, no, really, this is Otis. I have an idea. He's like, I haven't been hired for the job, but Queen Latifah's coming out with this new show. I have an idea. I want to pitch for the trailer. Nobody can do this but you. I was like, I'm in. Any opportunity to work with you, I'm in. I don't care what it, I'm in, right? So we spend all day under the Brooklyn Bridge. I'm doing all these backflips on cobblestone. Like, literally, it was all day until sun. As you can see, the sun came down. And as I see the final edits, there's two edits. One version does have a front flip, but none of the like backflips and somersaults and stuff that I had done. So at first I had a little attitude, but here's the genius of Otis Salid, is that he knows how to shoot dance and the nuances, and you don't need all that, right? Because less is more sometimes in order to tell the story. So he picked the perfect stuff, and we get a phone call and they're like, Fox loves it. They want you. They're going to send over paperwork, blah, blah, blah. And it's been history ever since. And what's crazy, I remember being in a McDonald's one time, and before I started doing Rap City, people be like, don't you dance? You know, and I think it was a silhouette or the physique. So even when Living Single came out, and that's mostly silhouette, people knew me more than they knew my face from behind, which is the craziest thing. And here's another thing that I was so insecure about my body for so many years, right? I'm only 5'6", but remember, I'm a predominantly white sport, the only Black girl. I'm the tallest one because most gymnasts are 4'9". I was wearing a bra in like the third grade. So I have these really large breasts. I got these thick muscular thighs. I have these big shoulders that for me work great as far as gymnastics and athleticism. And half the time I tell people I'm a gymnast, they're like, yeah, right. And then I got to like backflip a million times to show them. But I was so insecure that I didn't even take my t-shirt off at the beach until I was a senior in college. And so now you can't keep clothes on me. But for this body to be the thing that people recognize is insane to me. So I embrace it now, you know, I do.
Even before we started this interview, we just thought about like, who do we know that are like superstar choreographers, right? I mean, literally there we can name them on one hand.
Five.
Yeah, barely, right? Les, like, I mean, we kind of dropped off. You started off, you were like, yeah, and I did Diddy Call Me for Mary J. Blige, da-da-da-da-da. But how did you go from just being a dancer, getting called for videos, to like being like the dancer?
It's so crazy that you say that. One, when you're a dancer, you don't get really a time to enjoy the project that you're in because we're always looking for the next job. So even if I'm on this like 4 or 5 month tour with Keith Sweat or Mary J. Blige, I'm already making phone calls because I know the tour is ending in 3 months that I need to line up some work. So I don't really get to enjoy it as much, especially when it was just music videos. It really was just being in the right place in the right era at the right time with the right skills and people recognizing that, you know, that I was just an anomaly. And it's funny that you say that because I always feel like I'm not part of the conversation of history books when you talk about Debbie Allen and Paula Abdul and Misty Copeland and Judith Jameson. Like, I want to be one of those names that is mentioned when it comes to dance, not just hip hop dance, even though that's my genre, but when you say dance, dancers, choreographers, I want to be part of that conversation and I'm not there yet. Like, right, I haven't been, and I'm not doing this for honors or flowers or whatever, but I haven't been given any of those awards or recognitions, and most dancers rarely get that, you know what I mean? We're in Hip Hop 50 this year, and they care more about the MC than the actual four elements of hip hop, which include dance, fashion, and the DJ, right? But no one really has called me unless it's about the Rap City story, but not as far as dance and stuff. And I've been trying to work with Universal Hip Hop Museum to like curate a whole section. I'm like, we got to talk more than about, we're a whole decade of dancers. Forget the video vixens, the women who have real athletic contribution, choreography of a golden era of hip hop. Like, there needs to be a whole section. So that's kind of a fight and stuff too. And it always seems to be a fight. To answer your question, all I can do is just say God. God chose me and the handful of us to travel the globe to work with such amazing people that, and so now I'm transitioning I saw this movie 20 Feet from Stardom, which was about the background singers, Darlene.
Oh, Love. Yes, I right. saw that, yes.
Light bulb, because I'm going, oh my God, I am them, they are me. We are 20 feet behind the artist, and people know us, or they know us in the industry to keep calling us for work, but do people really know our names and stuff? And I'm like, even though me and maybe Josie and Tish and Fatima are some of the well-known ones, I'm like, there's a whole slew of us that people need to know. And I was like, I have to tell this story. So the only way for me to tell this story now is to put on my director's hat. And so I shot a little bit of it, enough for a trailer to start shopping around before the pandemic, talking to Bobby Brown and Teddy Riley. But I also realized too that we have to hurry up and tell this story because time's not on our side, right? Mm-hmm. I can't talk to John Singleton. I can't talk to Heavy D. I can't talk to Michael Jackson. I can't talk to Whitney Houston. You know, my mom's getting older. I had to hurry up and get her on camera. Like all of our greats are, who have done amazing work for this genre of hip hop. We can't have those conversations about the dancers, right? Who have hired us, who, you know, we make your $300 concert ticket worth the purchase, because otherwise people could stay home and watch you on HBO for free. So then pay us accordingly. I know I'm going into a tangent, but to answer your question, how did I become the biggest name? I think it's just through hard work and recognizing the gifts that God gave me. And once I got my pinky toe in the door, it's like I had to become better. I had to make sure everybody knew who I was, kind of in regard to my work, but I always wanted to make sure I operated with integrity. When you come from like a family of women like mine, my mother, you know, became a nurse later in life and, you know, single parent and stuff, and women that you just don't want to let down and disappoint. And my mother and all of them taught me how to be respectful. So I always knew that my name and my reputation had to stand on something. So me having like sex with all the people who worked with me or whatever, I never, ever, ever had to have, never, not, you don't have to, never had sex with any artist or any man who signed my check. I never kept it messy in those relationships because I could see being in a room with 20 other girls who were trying to be Mrs. Teddy Riley or Mrs. Bobby Brown and whatever. And I'm like, you're never going to fire me because of that, some emotional whatever tie. You'll fire me because I either got hurt, but not because I couldn't do my job. And so that was always a big deal for me too. And that's kind of always, I always tell people too, is that you have to move with it with integrity, because your reputation really is all you have, your reputation and your body of work and your quality of work. I show up on time. I'm probably the only person on the planet who still shows up early for everything. I can't, because that's my biggest pet peeve. I hate waiting, and I hate keeping people wait. So I'm never late unless it's an act of God. And those kind of things stick with you. And I'm always nice to everybody, the electrician, the gaffer, the cook. I can't stand people when you go to a restaurant who is rude to the waiter, the waitress. I can't, we'll never eat together again. I talk to everybody like we are on the same playing field, which we are. We're all a check away from rejection, from homelessness, from whatever, you know. And for me, this is just a job. And because I don't have that 9-to-5 comfortability, it is a hustle all day. So I am grateful and gracious to any and everybody that supports me or, you know, could be a potential opportunity. And you know, like I know that we've seen people who are behind us who are above us.
And I just love that. I mean, Muhammad, thanks for taking a step back and really grounding us in that piece of the conversation, because that is why we're here. Number one is to honor the work, to honor you, but also to hopefully inspire. You know, I have people in my life, you know, Imani Carter, you know, my friend Adrian, her daughter is a brilliant, brilliant turquoise, a brilliant dancer. I mean, mm-hmm. girls who are in college and who are doing their things. And, you know, you're the one that they look up to. So they have to hear your story, the totality of the story and your voice. So thank you for sharing that with us. Now, there's one thing that Muhammad and I have debated. I almost put a wager on it, but I don't want to lose my money on a Sunday morning. Were you a fly girl or not?
No, ma'am. I was not a fly girl.
I don't know why in my mind you were a fly girl. Wow.
Technically,
I was not a fly girl.
Because I should have been. Then when I tell you, Muhammad, you want to change.
I want to recount.
No, I am. And that honestly was the thing that almost broke me, because I wanted to be a fly girl really bad. And they had an audition in New York at the Palladium, which was a big nightclub. All the press, local press and stuff was there. But obviously now I know that it was just for publicity's sake. They had made a phone call, and I'll tell more about this in a documentary, to one of the other dancers. I won't say it, I'm gonna give too much, but who already knew that they were going to have the job, but still had to kind of show up to save faith. And I remember having auditioned so well. And if you ever interview Flex Alexander, ask him about it, because he was one of the people who was there to help with the choreography with Rosie Perez. And so the press, after I did all these flips and whatever, was like, oh my God, you were the best in the room. But they already knew who they wanted, and who they wanted didn't look like me. And when I didn't get that, in fact, I was asked to lose 10 pounds. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? When one of the dancers that was already there was thicker than I was, who was already a fly girl, who, if you go back and look at the footage, you'll know who I'm talking about. So, and can't do backflips. I was like, wait, what? But this is how God works, right? Because as angry and hurt and broken as I was that I wasn't a fly girl, two things happened. I probably performed more on that show with the artist that performed on the show. So I got to be on Living Color. And that's when Rap City happened, right? So when one door closes, another one opens. And I always say, rejection is God's protection, right? He didn't want me to be part of that show, which lasted shorter time than Rap City did. I was on that show for 7-8 years, and I don't think Living Color lasted that long, or would have been that long, you know, had I joined at that time. So that was the gift. So that's why I say you never quit, because you don't know what's right around the corner. You know what I mean? I was all in my feelings. And still to this day, people are like, you're a fly girl.
I'm like kind of mad about it right now.
Yeah. I gotta stop people. I'm like, nope, they don't get to have that credit on me. Sorry, I'm not a fly girl. I'm a fly queen girl. No, right. Girl.
You're the flyest one. Right. Okay, right. Let's be clear.
She asked me about how Whitney happened. Well, I was dancing for Bobby Brown, and we were there when they met, like, and she would be on the road with us, and Whitney always hung out with us with the dancers, you know. And she was like, well, you girls are gonna dance with me. And so we literally would always hang out. We were at the wedding, you know, we were there when she got pregnant. And then she was like, come on, I'm doing my video, I'm Every Woman, I need you girls, I don't want anybody else. And so we literally just transferred from in between her and Bobby back and forth. And, you know, she was literally home family too. You guys didn't see how much of a homegirl she's from. New, like you saw at the end, she was just like me, you, and every other round the way girl, but we knew early on us.
Wow. Les, thank you for sharing those stories. And I know you're working on a documentary, but this show that we're doing, you know, you're just walking around with all these stories, right? I feel like Nikita, that's how I felt about us too. Like who can you tell this? Like, you can't just walk up to somebody and be like, you know, I work with Michael Jackson, right? Like, they're going to be like, yeah, whatever. Right. Even like your boyfriend, or even if you have a child or whatever, they don't want to hear that. Like, you know, but we have to, this is like such a monumental work. I mean, that you've done, Les, like, I mean, just really, really, you know, we just wanted to give you this moment. And, you know, like you said, you have to, people have to know that, that you need the respect that you deserve for the work that you've done, the contribution to this culture. You know what I mean?
Culture, like, American culture. It's yes. Not just Black culture.
Global.
Global. Look, I was about to say Muhammad. Global contribution to this culture of art. Right? Because it's not just dance. It's not just making movies, clothing. It's just your artistic expression of who you are. And I did read somewhere that you were working on your autobiography, and you kind of maybe lent to that a little bit. What is that process like? Where are you in that process? What can you share with us about that work?
It is. I don't know how people do it, first of all, because I don't remember anything. Like, unless I'm digging up pictures and stuff, and then you didn't take pictures of certain moments. The only thing that's really helped me a lot too is that, thank God for social media, because people keep sending me or tagging me footage of things that I forgot. Literally just this morning, I forgot I had acted on the TV show All of Us that had Tony Rock and Elise Neal, and they were watching it and they sent me a screenshot like, that's you, huh? I was like, what show is this? Because I didn't even remember. Right. So that's what it's been with the dance journey and trying to get all of these memories and stuff before they go anywhere outside of my brain. And there's a lot. There's so many things I'm probably forgetting. A lot of artists that I work with who never saw the light of day that I choreographed, that, you know, intro and all these other artists and labels and relationships that I have with like DMX or with Chris Lighty and all these other people. Like, it's just a lot. And so I can see why documentaries and stuff take years and years and to figure out and to really try and get the timeline and try and get everybody else's participation. And the documentary is going to have its issues of trying to get, because it's so music driven or visual driven, right, to get clearances and stuff like that. So just like Woman King took 8 years, this may take a minute too. I'm just like, oh Lord, I just don't want to throw something together and then everybody's not going to be happy, right? You forget this person, you forget that person, and it's just going to be a thing. So I'm going to take my time and do the best I can before it's too late. So I'm just going to try and get as many interviews and then worry about piecing them together before people, you know, pass on, God forbid. Because we're at that stage and that age now where it's pretty hairy, scary. Hopefully, and I can't say, I'm just going to put it into the universe that this deal and this meeting that I had, that it comes to fruition, because it will give me my own show and put me in line to finally have a deal that like Ryan Seacrest and Carson Daly and,
yes,
and all these people have. Because I don't want to be a chick holding the mic anymore, right? I need to have a deal, a production deal, so I can start developing my own things at a network where there's a home for me. And I want to do more acting too. So I'm hoping there's some roles coming my way. The one that I've always wanted to be Pam Grier-esque with my physical.
Yes, I remember that. Yep.
I saw Woman King, I just was like foaming at the mouth. And people were like, how come you weren't in that? And I like wanted to punch my agent in the face. Like, how come I didn't even audition? I'm like trying to train now. And I'm telling everybody, I'm calling people at Sony. Like, if Woman King 2 comes, I just need to audition. Please let me just audition. I'm begging. Like, I don't know if you saw the picture I posted. I got sat next to a table with Gina Prince-Blythewood, Viola Davis, literally right next to each other. So we took a picture. I said, if this isn't the universe, and it's sitting in my house with candles and holy water and everything else, like, come on, let me do the work, keep me healthy, and please let me be in this next film. Thank you, ladies, for being such an example of grace and sisterhood and support and this platform of letting us, me and all of us, just kind of like share our journeys and the appreciation that you've shown for all of our hard work. And I love you girls for what you've done individually. I love what you're doing together. And I can't wait to be out in Ghana. And why not?
And teach me some dance moves.
Thank you, ladies. I appreciate you both so much. Keep doing what you girls are doing. I love us.
Yes, women and I love us, and we love you. Wow, Nikita, it was so wonderful having Big Les on today. Thanks so much for inviting her. That was just such a legendary story. I mean, not just her work as an icon, as I said, as a contributor to this culture, to, you know, hip hop culture, you know, modern pop culture, you know, and as we see how much dance is such a huge part of it and how she like kind of elevated her whole career. I mean, so many people just are dancers and one of the crowd, and for her to become one of the most legendary dancers of our time is really huge. And I do hope that she comes out with her projects so that she gets the light that she deserves. And a lot of times, as we see, you've got to do it yourself. There's nobody else who's going to tell the story. So hopefully
nobody is coming to rescue us. Nobody's coming to save us. Nobody's coming to tell our stories the way we would. Yeah. So you're 100% right about that, Mahamada.
Yeah. So we're going to be staying tuned to Big Les and all the work that she's doing. We're definitely going to be sharing some of those huge videos that she did on our social media. The Michael Jackson, the Whitney, Mary, Bobby Brown, like all, I mean, just so you can understand, if you are like new to who she is, you're going to understand who she is just from with some of the things that we're going to share. So definitely be sure to stay tuned. Follow us on social media, on all platforms. We're at The Soul Chronicles, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We are on Spotify, Apple, Google. You can find us. So yeah, thanks for tuning in. We love to hear your thoughts. If you used to listen to Big Les on BET or on Hot 97 or The Beat or Big Boys Neighborhood, whatever it was, you know, share your comments. Let us know how you remember her and what's your favorite video that she was featured or choreographed. We'd love to hear it. Thanks again for staying tuned with us at The Soul Chronicles, and we look forward to seeing you. Well, not seeing you. We look forward to having you join us for another episode soon. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.